Not everyone believes in a formal religion, but nearly everyone believes in forgiveness. You can be of immeasurable help to the dying by enabling them to see the approach of death as the time for reconciliation and reckoning. Any feelings of being unforgiven and unforgivable make the dying person suffer so. But these only exist in their heart or mind. In order to clear any feelings of guilt, encourage them to ask for purification from the depths of their heart. If they really ask for purification and go through it, forgiveness will be there. To help them to forgive themselves, tell them to remember the good things they have done. Forgive everyone else in their life and ask for forgiveness from anyone they may have harmed. Encourage them to make up with friends or relatives and to clear their heart, so as not to keep even a trace of hatred or the slightest grudge. If they cannot meet the person from whom they feel estranged, suggest they phone them or leave a taped message or letter and ask for forgiveness. Time and time again, people whose hearts have been hardened by self-hatred and guilt find, through a simple act of asking for pardon, unsuspected strength and peace. All religions stress the power of forgiveness, and this power is never more necessary nor more deeply felt than when someone is dying. Through forgiving and being forgiven, we purify ourselves of the darkness of what we have done and prepare ourselves most completely for the journey through death. If your dying friend or relative is familiar with some kind of meditation practice, encourage him or her to rest in meditation as much as possible and meditate with the person as death approaches. If the dying person is at all open to the idea of spiritual practice, help the person find a suitable, simple practice. Do it with him or her as often as possible, and keep reminding the person gently of it as death nears. The whole atmosphere of dying can be transformed if people find a practice they can do wholeheartedly before and as they die. As you help them begin, pray for the success of their practice with all your heart and mind. Pray for them to be given every energy and faith to follow the path they choose. Even at the latest stages of dying, people make the most startling spiritual progress by using one prayer, or one mantra, or one simple visualization with which they really made a connection in their heart.
The most valuable and powerful of all practices I've found in caring for the dying, one which I have seen an astonishing number of people take to with enthusiasm, is the practice from the Tibetan tradition called Poa, which means the transference of consciousness or the ejection of consciousness at the moment of death. Poa for dying people have been performed by friends, relatives or masters quite simply and naturally all over the modern world. Thousands of people have been given the chance to die serenely because of its power. It gives me joy to make the heart of the Poa practice now available to anyone who wishes to use it. I want to emphasize that this is a practice that anyone at all can do. It is simple, but it is also the most essential practice we can do to prepare for our own death, and it is the main practice I teach my students for helping their dying friends and relatives and their loved ones who have already died. First, make sure that you're comfortable, and if possible, assume the meditative posture. If you're doing this practice as you are coming close to death, just sit as comfortably as you're able or practice lying down. Then bring your mind home, release the grasping, and relax in your nature. Now, invoke in the sky in front of you the embodiment or whatever truth you believe in the form of a radiant light. Choose whichever divine being or saint that you feel close to. If you're a Buddhist, invoke the Buddha with whom you feel an intimate connection. If you're a practicing Christian, then feel with all your heart the vivid and immediate presence of God, the Holy Spirit, or Jesus Christ, or the Virgin Mary. If you don't feel linked with any particular spiritual figure, simply imagine a form of a pure golden light in the sky before you. The important point is that you consider the being you are visualizing, or whose presence you feel, is the embodiment of the truth, wisdom, and compassion of all the Buddhas, saints, masters, and enlightened beings. Don't worry if you cannot visualize them very clearly. Just fill your heart with their presence and trust that they are there. Then focus your mind and heart and soul on the presence you have invoked and pray. Through your blessing, grace, and guidance, through the power of the light that streams from you, may all my negative karma, destructive emotions, obscurations, and blockages be purified and removed. May I know myself forgiven for all the harm I may have thought and done. May I accomplish this profound practice of prayer and die a good and peaceful death. And through the triumph of my death, may I be able to benefit all other beings, living or dead. Now imagine that the presence of light that you have invoked is so moved by your sincere and heartfelt prayer that he or she responds with a loving smile and sends out love and compassion in a stream of rays of light from his or her heart. As these touch and penetrate you, they cleanse and purify all your negative karma, destructive emotions, and obscurations, which are the cause of suffering. And you see and feel that you are totally immersed in light. You are now completely purified and completely healed by the light streaming from the presence. Consider that your very body, which is the result of your past karma, now dissolves completely into light. Then your body of light now soars up into the sky and emerges inseparably with the blissful presence of light, and remain in that state of oneness with the presence for as long as possible. So to do this practice even more simply, begin as before by resting quietly and then invoke the presence of the embodiment of truth. Imagine your consciousness as a sphere of light at your heart, which flashes out from you like a shooting star and flies into the heart of the presence of in front of you. It dissolves and merges with the presence. Through this practice, you are investing your mind in the wisdom mind of the Buddha or the enlightened being, which is the same as surrendering your soul into the nature of God. Tengku says that this is like casting a pebble into a lake. Think of it as plummeting down into the water, deeper and deeper. Imagine that through the blessing, your mind is transformed into the wisdom mind of this enlightened presence. The most essential way to do this practice is this. Simply merge your mind with the wisdom mind of the pure presence. That is to say, consider my mind and the mind of Buddha are one. So choose whichever one of these three versions of the poem feels more comfortable or has more appeal for you at any particular moment. Sometimes the most powerful practice can be the most simple one. But whichever one you choose, remember that it is essential to take the time now to become familiar with this practice. How else will you have the confidence to do it for yourself or others at the moment of death? My master Jaman Kenta wrote, "If you meditate and practice in this manner always, at the moment of death, it will come easier."
You should be so familiar with the practice of powa that it becomes a natural reflex, your second nature. Remember that we never know how we will die, or if we will be given the time to recall any kind of practice at all. Either we are familiar with the powa, or we are not. There's a simple way to gauge this. Just look at your reactions when you're in a critical situation, or in a moment of crisis, such as an earthquake, or an accident, or in a nightmare. Do you respond with the practice, or don't you? And if you do, how stable and confident is your practice? Practice powa as intensively as you can, until you can be sure you will react with it to any unforeseen event. This will make certain that whenever death comes, you will be as ready as you can be. How can we use this practice to help someone who is dying? The principle and the sequence of the practice are exactly the same. The only difference is that you visualize the Buddha or spiritual presence above the head of the dying person. Imagine that the rays of light pour down onto the dying person, purifying his or her whole being, and then he or she dissolves into light and merges into the spiritual presence. Do this practice throughout your loved one's illness, and especially, and most important, when the person is breathing their last breath, or as soon as possible after breathing stops, and before the body is touched or disturbed in any way. If the dying person knows you are going to do this practice for them, and knows what it is, it can be a great source of inspiration and comfort. You can be doing the practice quietly, and the person need not even know about it. On the other hand, if he or she is open to it, as sometimes dying people are, share the practice and explain how to do it. People often ask, "If my dying relative or friend is a practicing Christian and I am a Buddhist, is there any conflict?" "How could there be?" I tell them. "You are invoking the truth, and Christ and Buddha are both compassionate manifestations of truth, appearing in different ways to help beings." Doctors and nurses can also do powa for their dying patients. Imagine how marvelously it could change the atmosphere in a hospital if those who are ministering to the dying were also doing this practice. Sogyal Rinpoche formulated this essential powa specially from the traditional Tibetan practice for dying, and it incorporates all the most important principles. So it is not only a practice for dying, but it can also be used both to purify and to heal. It is important for the living and for the sick as well. If a person is going to be healed, it will assist that healing. If a person is dying, it will help them and heal their spirit in death. And if the person has died, it will continue to purify them. If you are not sure whether a person who is seriously ill is going to live or die, then whenever you visit them, you can do this powa practice for them. And when you go home, do it again. The more you do it, the more your dying friend will be purified. You never know if you will see your friend again, or if you will be present when he or she actually dies. So seal each visit with this practice, just as a preparation, and go on doing the practice in whatever spare moments you have. What if someone is dying in bitterness, feeling that their suffering is useless? Perhaps nothing is as painful as believing that there is no use to the pain you are going through. There is a way that you can transform your death, even now, and even in great pain. Dedicate with all your heart the suffering of dying and your death itself to the benefit and ultimate happiness of others. Imagine now all the others in the world who are in pain like yours or even greater. fill your heart with compassion for them. And pray to whomever you believe in, and ask that your suffering should help alleviate theirs. Again and again, dedicate your pain to the alleviation of their pain, and you will quickly discover in yourself a new source of strength, a compassion you'll hardly be able now to imagine, and a certainty, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that your suffering is not only not being wasted, but has now a marvelous meaning. This is the practice of Tonglen, which takes on a very special significance when someone is terminally ill or dying. If you have a serious or life-threatening illness, try as intensely as you can to imagine every other person in the world who has the same disease as you. Say to yourself, with deep compassion, "May I take on the suffering of everyone who has this terrible illness. May they be free from this affliction and from all their suffering." Then imagine that their illness and tumors leave their body in the form of smoke and dissolve into your illness and tumors. When you breathe in all their suffering. And when you breathe out total healing and well-being. Each time you do this practice, believe with complete conviction that they are now healed. As you approach death, think continually to yourself, "May I take on the suffering, the fear and loneliness of all others all over the world who are dying or will die. May they be all freed from pain and confusion. May they all find comfort and peace of mind. May whatever suffering I am enduring now and will endure in the future help them toward a good rebirth and ultimate enlightenment." There is no need for anyone on earth to die in resentment and bitterness. No suffering, however dreadful, is or can be meaningless if it is dedicated to the alleviation of the suffering of others. Be free of attachment and aversion. Keep your mind pure, and unite your mind with the Buddha. All the masters would give this advice for the moment of death, for this is the essence of what is needed as you come to die. Padmasambhava said, "Now, when the bardo of dying dawns upon me, I will abandon all grasping, yearning, and attachment, enter undistracted into clear awareness of the teaching, and eject my consciousness into the space of unborn rikpa. As I leave this compound body of flesh and blood, I will know it to be a transitory illusion." At the moment of death, there are two things that count: whatever we have done in our lives, and what state of mind we are in at that moment. Even if we have accumulated a lot of negative karma, if we are able really to make a change of heart at the moment of death, it can decisively influence our future and transform our karma, for the moment of death is an exceptionally powerful opportunity for purifying karma. Remember that all the habits and tendencies that are stored in the ground of our ordinary mind are lying ready to be activated by any influence. Even now, we know how it only takes the slightest provocation to prompt our instinctive, habitual reactions to surface. This is especially true at the moment of death. Therefore, our state of mind at death is all important. If we die in a positive frame of mind, we can improve our next birth, despite our negative karma. And if we are upset and distressed, it may have a detrimental effect, even though we may have used our lives well. This means that the last thought and emotion that we have before we die has an extremely powerful determining effect on our immediate future. This is why the masters stress that the quality of the atmosphere around us when we die is crucial. With our friends and relatives, we should do all we can to inspire positive emotions and sacred feelings like love, compassion, and devotion. And all we can to help them to let go of grasping, yearning, and attachment. The ideal way for a person to die is having given away everything, internally and externally, so that there is as little as possible yearning, grasping, and attachment for the mind at that essential moment to latch on to. So before we die, we should try to free ourselves of attachment to all our possessions, friends, and loved ones. Everyone should do their best to work out attachment and grief with the dying person before death comes. Cry together, express your love, and say goodbye, but try to finish with this process before the actual moment of death arrives. If possible, it is best if friends and relatives do not show excessive grief at the moment of death, because the consciousness of the dying person is at that moment exceptionally vulnerable. But don't worry if you have found yourself weeping at a deathbed. There are three essential practices for dying. At best, resting in the nature of mind or evoking the heart essence of our practice. Next, the POWA practice, the transference of consciousness. Last, relying on the power of prayer, devotion, aspiration, and the blessings of enlightened beings. Supreme practitioners of Dzogchen have completely realized the nature of mind during their lifetime, so when they die, they need only to continue to rest and abide in that state of Rigpa as they make the transition through death. They have no need to transfer their consciousness into any Buddha or enlightened realm, for they have already made real the wisdom mind of the Buddhas within themselves. Death for them is the moment of ultimate liberation, the crowning moment of their realization, and the consummation of their practice. The fourth line in Padmasambhava's verse, ejecting the consciousness into the space of unborn Rigpa, refers to the transference of consciousness, the POWA practice, which is the most commonly used practice for dying, and the special instruction associated with the Bardo of dying. It would be inappropriate here to explain the details of the traditional POWA practice, which must, always, and in all circumstances, be carried out under the guidance of a qualified master. The essential POWA practice, as Sogyal Rinpoche has explained, is as much a healing practice for the living as a practice for the moment of death, and can be done at any time without danger. However, the timing of the traditional POWA practice is of paramount importance. It is essential that the timing is right, and it is not done too early. If a master is requested to do the transference for someone who is dying, he or she should be contacted as soon as possible, because even from a distance, POWA can still be affected. In all religious traditions, it is held that to die in a state of prayer is enormously powerful. As you die, invoke wholeheartedly all the Buddhas and your master. Pray that through regretting all your negative actions in this and other lives, they may be purified, and that you may die consciously and at peace, gain a good rebirth, and ultimately achieve liberation. Make a one-pointed and concentrated wish that you will be reborn either in a pure realm or as a human being, but in order to protect, nurture, and help others. To die with such love and such tender compassion in your heart until your last breath is said in the Tibetan tradition to be another form of POWA, and it will ensure that you will at least attain another precious human body. To create the most positive possible imprint on the mind stream before death is essential. The most effective practice of all to achieve this is a simple practice of Guru Yoga, where the dying person merges his or her mind with the wisdom mind of the Master or Buddha or any enlightened being. Even if you cannot visualize your Master at this moment, try at least to remember him. Think of him in your heart and die in a state of devotion. When your consciousness awakens again after death, this imprint of the Master's presence will awaken with you, and you will be liberated. If you die remembering the Master, then the possibilities of his or her grace are limitless. Even the display of sound, light, and color in the bardo of Dhammata may arise as the Master's blessing and the radiance of his or her wisdom nature.
How then do we most sensitively help an ordinary spiritual practitioner who are dying? All of us will need the love and the care that comes with emotional and practical support. But for a spiritual practitioner, the atmosphere, the intensity, and the dimension of spiritual help take on a special meaning. It would be ideal and a great blessing if their master were with them. But if this is not possible, their spiritual friends can be of an enormous help in reminding the dying person of the essence of the teachings and the practice that has been closest to their heart during life. For a practitioner who is dying, a spiritual inspiration and the atmosphere of trust and faith and devotion that will naturally rise from it are essential. The loving and unflagging presence of the Master or the spiritual friends, the encouragement of the teachings, and the strength of their own practice all combine together to create and sustain this inspiration as precious in the last weeks and days almost as breath itself. A beloved student of mine who was dying of cancer and asked me how best she should practice as she came nearer to death, particularly when she no longer had the strength to concentrate on any formal practice. "Remember just how very fortunate you've been," I told her, "to have met so many masters, received so many teachings, and had the time and the possibility to practice. I promise you, the benefit of all that will never leave you. The good karma that you've created by it will stay with you and help you. Even to hear the teaching once, or meet a master like Thingu Khyentse Rinpoche, and have strong connection with him, as you did, is liberating in itself. If the time comes when you cannot practice actively anymore, the only really important thing for you to do is to relax as deeply as possible in the confidence of the view and rest in the nature of mind. It does not matter whether your body or your brain are still functioning. The nature of mind is always there, sky-like, radiant, blissful, limitless and unchanging. Know that beyond all doubt, and let this knowledge give you the strength to say, with a carefree abandon to all your pain, however great it is, go away now and leave me alone. If there is anything that irritates you or makes you feel uncomfortable in any way, don't waste your time trying to change it. Just keep returning to the view. Trust in the nature of your mind. Trust it deeply and relax in it completely. There's nothing new that you need to learn or acquire or understand. Just allow whatever you've already been given to blossom in you and open at greater and greater depths. Rely on whatever for you is the most inspiring of all the practice. And if it is difficult for you to visualize or follow a formal kind of practice, Remember what Dudjom Mbeki always used to say, that to feel the presence is more important than getting the details of the visualization clear. Now is the time to feel as intensely as you can, to feel with your whole being the presence of your masters, of Padmasambhava, of the Buddhas. Whatever may be happening to your body, remember that your heart is never sick or crippled. You have loved Dingu Khenpo Rinpoche, so feel his presence and really ask him for help and purification. Put yourself entirely in his hands, heart and mind, body and soul. The simplicity of total trust is one of the most powerful forces in the world. Let your heart fill with devotion for Padmasambhava and your master, and simply feel that you are in his presence and that the whole space around you is him. Then invoke him and go over in your mind every moment you spend with his being. Merge your mind with him and say from the depth of your heart, in your own words, something like this. You say, you see how helpless I am at this point, and how I can no longer practice intensively. Now I must really rely totally on you. I trust you completely. Take care of me. Make me one with you. Do the Guru Yoga practice, imagining with a special intensity the rays of light streaming out from your master and purifying you and burning away all your impurities, your illness too, and healing you, your body melting into light and merging your mind in the end with the wisdom mind in complete confidence. When you practice, don't worry if you feel it is not flowing easily. Simply trust and feel it in your heart. Everything now depends on inspiration, because only that will relax your anxiety and dissolve your nervousness. So keep a wonderful photograph of your master or Padmasambhava in front of you and focus on it gently at the beginning of your practice, and then just relax into its radiance. Don't worry about anything, even if you find your attention wandering. There's no particular thing that you have to hold on. Just let go and drift in the awareness of the blessing. And don't let small, niggling kind of questions distract you, like, is this rigpa or is it not? Just let yourself be more and more natural. Remember your rigpa is always there, always in the nature of your mind. Remember Dingu Khenpo Rinpoche's words, if your mind is unaltered, you are in the state of rigpa. So as you have received the teachings and you have received introduction to the nature of mind, so just relax in the rigpa without doubting. You're lucky enough to have some good spiritual friends near you now. Encourage them to create an environment of practice around you and to go on practicing around you up until and after your death. Get them to read you a poem that you love, or a guidance from your master, or an inspiring teaching, and ask them to play you a tape of your master's teaching, a chant of the practice, or an exalting piece of music. What I pray is that your every waking moment should be mingled with the blessing of the practice in an atmosphere alive and luminous with inspiration. As the music or the tape of the teachings goes on playing, drift off to sleep in it, wake up in it, doze in it, eat in it. Let the atmosphere of the practice totally pervade this last part of your life. Do nothing but practice, so that it even continues in your dreams. And just as she did, let the practice be the last and the strongest memory and influence on your mind, replacing in your mind stream a lifetime's ordinary habits. And as you feel yourself nearing the end, think only of your Master with every breath and heartbeat. Whatever thought you die with, remember, is the one that will return most potently when you reawaken in the Pardos after death.
At present, our body is undoubtedly the centre of our whole universe. We associate it without thinking with ourself and our ego, and this thoughtless and false association continually reinforces our illusion of their inseparable concrete existence. Because our body seems so convincingly to exist, my I seems to exist, and you seem to exist. And the entire illusory, dualistic world we never stop projecting around us looks ultimately solid and real. When we die, this whole compound construction falls dramatically to pieces. What happens, to put it extremely simply, is that consciousness, at its subtlest level, continues without the body and goes through the series of states called bardos. The teachings tell us that it is precisely because we no longer have a body in the bardos that there is no ultimate reason to fear any experience, however terrifying, that may happen to us after death. The problem, however, is that in the bardos, most people go on grasping at a false sense of self with its ghostly grasping at physical solidity. And this continuation of that illusion, which has been at the root of all suffering in life, exposes them in death to more suffering, especially in the bardo of becoming. What is essential is to realize now, in life, when we still have a body, that its apparent, so convincing solidity is a mere illusion. The most powerful way to realize this is to learn, after meditation, how to become a child of illusion. To refrain from solidifying, as we're always tempted to do, the perceptions of ourselves and our world, and to go on, like the child of illusion, seeing directly, as we do in meditation, that all phenomena are illusory and dreamlike. The deepening perception of the body's illusory nature is one of the most profound and inspiring realizations we can have to help us to let go. Inspired by and armed with this knowledge, when we are faced at death with the fact that our body is an illusion, we will be able to recognize its illusory nature without fear, calmly to free ourselves from all attachment to it, and to leave it behind willingly, even gratefully and joyfully, knowing it now for what it is. When we are at last freed from the body that has defined and dominated our understanding of ourselves for so long, the karmic vision of one life is completely exhausted. But any karma that might be created in the future has not yet begun to crystallize. So what happens in death is that there is a gap or space that is fertile with vast possibility. It is a moment of tremendous pregnant power when the only thing that matters, or could matter, is how exactly our mind is. Stripped of a physical body, mind stands naked, revealed startlingly for what it has always been, the architect of our reality. So if, at the moment of death, we have already a stable realization of the nature of mind, in one instant we can purify all our karma. And if we continue that stable recognition, we will actually be able to end our karma altogether by entering the expanse of the primordial purity of the nature of mind and attaining liberation. The bardo of dying falls between the moment we contract a terminal illness or condition that will end in death and the ceasing of the inner respiration. It is called painful because if we are not prepared for what will happen to us at death, it can be an experience of tremendous suffering. When we suddenly realize that our whole life, our whole reality is disappearing, it is terrifying. We don't know what is happening to us or where we are going. Nothing in our previous experience has prepared us for this. As anyone who has cared for the dying will know, our anxiety will even heighten the experience of physical pain. If we have not taken care of our lives, or our actions have been harmful or negative, we will feel regret, guilt, and fear. So just to have a measure of familiarity with these teachings on the bardos will bring us some reassurance, inspiration, and hope, even though we may never have practiced and realized them. For good practitioners who know exactly what is happening, not only is death less painful and fearful, but it is the very moment they have been looking forward to. They face it with equanimity and even with joy. Good practitioners can take care of themselves when they die, but ordinary ones will need to have their teacher at their bedside, if possible, or otherwise a spiritual friend who can remind them of the essence of their practice and inspire them to the view.
Whoever we are, it can be a great help to be familiar with the process of dying. If we understand the stages of dying, we will know that all the strange and unfamiliar experiences we are passing through are part of a natural process. As this process begins, it signals the coming of death and reminds us to alert ourselves. And for a practitioner, each stage of dying will be a signpost, reminding us of what is happening to us and of the practice to do at each point. The process of dying is explained in considerable detail in the different Tibetan teachings. Essentially, it consists of two phases of dissolution. An outer dissolution, when the senses and elements dissolve, and an inner dissolution of the gross and subtle thought states and emotions. Our whole existence is determined by the elements: earth, water, fire, air, and space. Through them, our body is formed and sustained, and when they dissolve, we die. The Tantric Buddhist tradition of Tibet offers an explanation of the body that is quite different from the one most of us are used to. This is of a psychophysical system which consists of a dynamic network of subtle channels, winds or inner air and essences. These are called respectively Nadi, Prana, and Bindu in Sanskrit, and Sa, Lung, and Tikle in Tibetan. We are familiar with something similar in the meridians and qi energy of Chinese medicine and acupuncture. Once we have a physical body, we also have what are known as the five skandhas, the aggregates that compose our whole mental and physical existence. They are the constituents of our experience, the support for the grasping of ego, and also the basis for the suffering of samsara. They are form, feeling, perception, intellect, and consciousness, also translated as form, sensation, recognition, formation, and consciousness. All of these components will dissolve when we die. The process of dying is a complex and interdependent one, in which groups of related aspects of our body and mind disintegrate simultaneously. As the winds disappear, the bodily functions and the senses fail. The energy centers collapse, and without their supporting winds, the elements dissolve in sequence from the grossest to the subtlest. The result is that each stage of the dissolution has its physical and psychological effect on the dying person, and is reflected by external physical signs as well as inner experiences. The outer dissolution is when the senses and elements dissolve. How exactly will we experience this when we die? The first thing we may be aware of is how our senses cease to function. If people around our bed are talking, there will come a point where we can hear the sound of their voices, but we cannot make out the words. This means that the ear consciousness has ceased to function. We look at an object in front of us, and we can only see its outline, not its details. This means that the eye consciousness has failed. And the same happens with our faculties of smell, taste, and touch. When the senses are no longer fully experienced, it marks the first phase of the dissolution process.